Welcome back to Topic to Topic. I'm your host, Kendrew, per usual. This is your weekend review edition of the show. It's just me again. But I promise you it's going to be great regardless. I have three stories, one of which just came out today with Kyle Rittenhouse found not guilty on all five counts. We'll look into what implications will this have, especially in regards to the Second Amendment. We'll get into the story coming out of Oklahoma. The National Guard not complying with COVID vaccine mandates. Are they getting in trouble with the Defense Department? I'll get into it that as well. And then last but not least, are you aware of some of the tactics the FBI is using towards parents who are speaking out at school boards? A whistleblower released some documents revealing some more corruption coming out of the FBI. I'll cover all of these stories on the show on Taboo Topic, a place where we dare to question narrative and think out loud, a place where free speech triumphs your safe space. That said, before we go on break, I want to remind everyone, you can read featured newsletters just by typing in the URL at kenjin296.substack.com. I repeat, kenjin296.substack.com. Spell the word engine, put the letter K in front of the word engine, then you get Kenjin, one word, 296.substack.com. You can also follow me on Instagram by typing in Kenjin_Express. Kenjin_Express. And then last but not least, you can follow me on Taboo Topic on Facebook just by looking for the logo that says Honesty Equals Understanding. Excuse me. That said, ladies and gentlemen, have a great show. Stay tuned. We'll be back after this short break.
Richard McGinnis, we the jury find the defendant Kyle H. Rittenhouse not guilty. As to the third count of the information, unknown male, we the jury find the defendant Kyle H. Rittenhouse not guilty. As to the fourth count of the information, Anthony Huber, we the jury find the defendant Kyle H. Rittenhouse not guilty. As to the fifth count of the information, Gage Grosskreutz, we the jury find the defendant Kyle H. Rittenhouse not guilty.
Welcome back to Taboo Topic. I'm your host, Kenji, per usual, with your weekend review edition. And because it's a weekend review edition, you know what that means. I gotta ask the question. How was your week? Was it good? Meh? Terrible? More good than bad, hopefully. Let me know through the social media platforms I mentioned earlier. That said, I want to briefly explain how my week went. My week was pretty good for the most part. I had two subbing gigs at the end of this week. Blah, excuse my poor English. But I quickly learned what I didn't want to do or what kind of place I would did not want to teach in the future. So the first gig on Thursday, yesterday, was at an academy. I'm not going to be specific, but at this particular academy, it was students who had behavior problems. Let's just say within the first, 5 minutes of the first class, first period, I learned why and how those kids have behavior problems. Let's just say, I wish I had more freedom to discipline those kids. There wasn't much I could do, especially given that I was a sub and, well, I used to be a student. Compound that with students who have problems with listening to authority or listening to directions. You can only imagine how long of a day that was for me. Then today, it was a complete 180. Did a regular high school again for a social studies / econ class. And the students were great. They were quiet, fantastic. They're good kids. Did not have to raise my voice at them at any point. It was fantastic. Complete 180. Which the 180 is a good segue to this first story with Kyle Rittenhouse, because Kyle Rittenhouse, as of today, will walk as a free man. And he's a man now. He is 18 years old, so legally speaking, he's a man. And metaphorically, some will look at him as a man for stepping up what he did last year. I'm not going to get into too much of that. I briefly went over my initial thoughts once I learned more about the case and actually started paying attention to the situation. You can look it up no matter what platform you're listening to this podcast from or you follow this podcast from. Just go back 2 or 3 episodes titled Kyle Rittenhouse and you can listen to what I have to say there. For this story, I just kind of want to focus on the facts and how we reached to this 180. And then my thoughts, if you will. Thoughts about the case in it by itself and what this means for us, I think anyway. First and foremost, let's go over what the media told us for like the last year or so. Starting on August 25th of 2020. Let's keep in mind, for context, that August 2020, there's still a lot of rioting and protesting, looting. It was not uncommon for anybody to see a video, no matter what streaming service they use or cable source they use. It was not unusual to see videos of cities looking like a war zone, buildings being burnt to the ground, gas stations being exploded, blah blah blah, whatever. People getting beaten up for no reason. This was a result of the death of George Floyd. These rioters were a mix of Black Lives Matter rioters and Antifa. Antifa is a supposedly anti-fascist group. But those two groups were responsible for what was going on last summer. Many mayors and state governors decided to hold back, especially in blue states, or bluer states, I should say, or blue leadership. For the most part, they told the police to not do anything, and so that's how we got the result that we got. And here was this one kid who had family in Kenosha, Wisconsin, but also lives in Illinois. Mainly, his primary residence was in Illinois with his mom. But he still had family in Wisconsin, where his dad lived and some other family members. And to help the cause, if you will, to make sure the cities are protected and our buildings are being respected, if you will, or institution. He ended up going to Kenosha, Wisconsin that night. And before I tell you the facts of what happened, I just want to give you what the media told us, right? So if you listen to the media, CNN, CNBC, NBC, ABC, CBS, pretty much any news network, any New York Times, any journalism, mainstream journalism that you know, like the New York Times, Washington Post, if you would have gone off of that alone and not done a balance of fact check, if you will, to kind of check out some right wing sources to see what they had to say about the Kyle Rittenhouse scenario or situation, You would have thought he was a white supremacist who went out of his way to kill protesters just because they were protesting Black Lives Matter. And he definitely had the intent of killing people because he crossed state lines with a gun. What was he doing there? He had no family there. A lot of lies about Kyle during this time period. Like I said, we're going to keep my opinions out of this for now. Let's take our presumptions out and just focus on what actually happened that night. Let's actually understand and look at the facts. Because that's what this show wants. I want this show to do, right? Let's be honest about what happened. We can have an honest conversation afterwards. So he was 17 at the time, first and foremost. With that said, he has family in Kenosha. And the other fact, another fact check, he did not cross state lines with a gun. The gun was already in Kenosha. It was waiting at his friend's stepfather's house. He only crossed state lines only when Kenosha police wouldn't let him surrender to them after the shootings. So he went to the closest police station he knew, a few miles away in Illinois. Within an hour of the shootings, he had given himself up to the police there. Now, what would have happened that would have made Kyle want to turn himself in? Well, you see, there was three people who attacked him that night. Three people who were part of the protesting, and I say that in air quote, because they were rioting. But he was being attacked from those three folks. His original intent, by the way, Kyle Rittenhouse, his original intent of being in Kenosha was to provide medical aid, and when he picked up his gun from his friend's stepfather's home, it was used as a safety precaution. And we'll get into why that was such a smart move in that sense. But he was being attacked. And in doing so, one person hit him with the skateboard, I believe. The one person he hurt and injured, correct me if I'm wrong, but one person actually raised a gun at him and then charged at him. I don't remember what the third person did, but regardless, all of that happened, forced Kyle to make a split-second decision of it's either him or it's me. Either he's going home or I'm going home. And then he decided that he was the one that was going to go home. So he ended up killing two people, injured one. And that's why I said it was a smart decision. And then afterwards, the police, I guess, were looking for him, and that's how he ended up crossing state lines, because like I said a moment ago, as far as the cities and state governors and everything like that, they're pretty much telling the police to hold back, not do anything, let them destroy. They gotta express themselves. They're hurt. I remember all of that too. But for the last year, we heard this was a case of white supremacy as well. He's a white supremacist, and they used the fact that he was a Trump ally, I guess, a Trump supporter. Additionally, he's heavy and big into the Second Amendment. All of that. was enough for them to paint this young man or kid, depends on how you look at him, I guess, as the villain to begin with. Then you have the fact that these were people that are taking part in these air quote peaceful protests over, for social injustice. And so you add that, he's no longer just a villain, but he's a supervillain now in the media's eyes, and he needs to be taken down. This racist, white supremacist. But what they failed to tell us for the last year until this public trial was that all parties involved in Kyle Rittenhouse were white. All of them. And all of them went after him first. Again, if he just went off basically the liberal world, liberal sources, you would have not gotten that. As the facts unfolded in this trial, that's what we learned. Now, I'm not going to get into Kyle Rittenhouse in particular, but I want to get into what this verdict means. Which, first and foremost, when I saw him drop down after he heard that last not guilty verdict, I could not help but feel for the man. And they say man because, legally speaking, he's a man now, right? I could not help but feel for him. For the last year, he's had to deal with lie after lie after lie. And now the media has continued to spin the truth just for the sake of stirring up the pot once more, to give ammunition to go ahead and potentially riot and loot once more. I hope I'm wrong. I hope that's not the case. I don't want it to happen. I don't want to see it happen, but I'm scared for Kyle and people in inner cities. I'm scared what's going to happen within the next week or so, especially in blue states and blue counties or blue cities. God only knows what's about to happen within the next week or so. But with all that said, there's something to be said about the prosecution, first and foremost, right? How did the prosecution decide that this was worthy of pursuing to charge him and sentence him to life without parole? How on earth did they get that? The prosecution literally had to manufacture facts. Facts that held no solid foundation. It would be one thing if the case they built up had some foundation of truth. There are some elements of truth in there that they could potentially make an argument of why they should charge him. But it literally had nothing. My second critique is kind of the judge a little bit, too. Granted, the judge was really hard on the prosecution, but how come not at any point did the judge not consider a mistrial? That's my next question. Why did he allow to get to this point? And granted, maybe I'm not a lawyer, so maybe I don't know the ins and outs of why he did what he did, but it begs the question, from the start, you could tell that he was not guilty. why on earth did it take so... Why didn't the judge do anything during this whole time? This is not a case about the illegality of anything. This was a trial that the media essentially created. And now their foundation of lies started to collapse. To the point where even the jury, that people of the color community even agree with the fact that Kyle Rittenhouse should not be found guilty on any account of murder. And here's another thing that boggles my mind is that Kyle Rittenhouse was threatened life in prison without parole. But not a single prosecution has been done for the people that burned our cities down last year. No one. No one. What the hell is that all about? But one white male, barely old enough to sign up for the military, who happens to support Trump, who happens to support the Second Amendment. No, he's the one that gets to be put on trial and prosecuted for life. Does this seem a little, I don't know, politicized as well? This prosecution was a political hack more than a legal hack? And then also brings my next point about this case. It's kind of hard for me to wrap my mind around. Is when did self-defense become controversial? And I think I just answered my own question. It kind of became controversial with the Stand Your Ground law in Florida. Back when George Zimmerman and Trayvon Martin, that whole thing occurred. And actually, ironically enough, that's when Black Lives Matter was born. That organization, that movement, right? Because essentially a guy, a neighborhood watchman, decided to play police after the police literally told him not to continue to pursue this young man. And then this young man, reasonably so, probably was like, hey, what are you doing? And then, I'm not going to get into the nitty-gritty details of that, rehash that past. That's another story for another conversation of the day, whatever. But this was so obvious. There was no controversy behind this. There should have been no controversy. It should not have been controversial to begin with. Imagine what would have happened if they found him guilty on any of those accounts. What message would have that sent to us? It meant, if, hypothetically, that were the case, that the right to self-defense is no longer a human right. If someone's attacking me, and they're putting me in a position where my life is in danger, why should I not have the right, or anybody else, no matter what race you are, have the right to defend themselves? Even if it means taking their life. Because like I said, for Kyle's situation, he had to make a split second decision. It was either him or the guys attacking him, and he chose himself, rightfully so. It was bizarre to me to hear the prosecution here to say you lose your right to self-defense when you purchase a firearm or something along those lines. Which kind of also makes this kind of validates the point of this is a political hack to push an agenda. Push the agenda of losing our rights to bear arms. Because if you can't defend yourself with a firearm like the prosecution says or said, then we really don't have the Second Amendment anymore. Because that's one of its key components, key principles, is being able to defend yourself against others, including government tyranny. And no, it's not a call for violence. All right, let's get that straight out of the way real quick. Doesn't have to be government tyranny. It can be tyranny from other people, just like Kyle had to endure that night. People who had misguided aggression went after Kyle that night. And when a man or a woman has this misguided aggression and attacking on other people, especially innocent people, people more vulnerable, that's tyranny. Tyrannical. Kyle Rittenhouse was protecting himself from tyranny that night. Which, by the way, there was tyranny all over the country with our cities being burned to the ground, making it seem like it was a war zone out there. I am happy for Kyle Rittenhouse. Frankly, someone needs to hold the media accountable. I hope he sues them. Every single person, every single anchor, journalist, politician that made his life hell with the lies and the spin. I hope he holds them all accountable. Because if no one holds these, especially the media, if no one holds them accountable, then they'll just continue, they'll never learn. That's half the problem with our media and politicians today. There's really no accountability anymore. There's nothing that's holding them accountable. But if there's something that holds them accountable, there's precedent. First and foremost, it can't be from the government. The government, an unchecked government, can hold other institutions accountable. Plus, then you get into the whole crossfire with constitutionality of that. No, the accountability has to come from us, the people. We have to hold them accountable. Especially if they make a story and lie about you in particular. We have to be the ones to tell the media to stop. Get out of this victim mindset, if you will. And Kyle, you could tell he's been through a lot once he heard that final not guilty verdict when he dropped down, almost hyperventilating, it seemed like. You can tell that the lies have affected him. And I hope Kyle sues the heck out of all of them. Regardless of my feelings of whether or not he should have been there, I have mixed feelings about it at this point. Because I understand a little bit of the other side now as far as, well, he is old enough with parental consent to sign up for the military and hold a weapon to be trained to kill another human being, basically. So he's not really a kid in that sense, but another conversation. I just wanted to focus on the case in it by itself and the facts. And I hope that Kyle Rittenhouse gets justice with the media. Stay tuned. We'll be back after this short break. Welcome back to Taboo Topic. I am your host, Kenju, per usual. Before going any further, I want to remind everyone, you can leave a review no matter what platform you listen to this podcast from. Hopefully it's a 5-star, but if it's anything less, by all means, let me know so I can better serve you. That said, let's get into this next story coming out of Oklahoma. Now, to kind of understand what's been going on, a new leader of Oklahoma. I mean, first and foremost, let's go back a little bit further, actually. You have to understand that the military has a vaccine mandate. Right, everyone now is supposed to take any of the 3 vaccine available, or else they get discharged. I think it's dishonorable discharge, but don't hold me to that. With that said, the National Guard, in case you did not know, the National Guard, there's 2 kinds of National Guards you can do. You have the Air National Guard, and then you have the National Guard. The Air National Guard is Air Force, and then you have the Army National Guard. And so I'm going to be speaking, because I come from the Air Force, so I'll be speaking from an airman's perspective, if you will. There's 2 kinds of Guard members, if you will, right? So you have the active guard members, which is basically like active duty. You wear a uniform and you have the same privileges, such as the GI Bill, the tuition assistance, housing, food allowance, etc., etc., as active duty members. Then you have the traditional guardsmen, where they only show up and drill. Basically, they go to a base and they do some training for their job. Maybe 1 or 2 weekends out of the month, it depends. But for the most part, I think it's just 1 weekend. In order for them to keep that traditional guardsman up, they have to have a job on the side at least. And so because they're not full-time, because they're not full-time, they really don't get activated for certain scenarios, such as the riding, for example, last year. There are some instances where states called the National Guard and deployed their troops to make sure that the cities and businesses were safe. You had the January 6th scenario where the Pentagon called up all the guardsmen in different states to help out with the inauguration. I'm not sure if they're still there. I think they're still there. Don't hold me to that either. Excuse me. But that said, the Oklahoma National Guard said none of its members will be required to become vaccinated for COVID-19. And then the Pentagon afterwards said, okay, if you do that, then you'll lose your national recognition as guardsmen, if you will. And you'll be recognized as a militia group instead. And that's the story I want to talk a little bit about today. This second story. It's an interesting story because I come from that world. Now, when I went on terminal leave more specifically, right? Because when the vaccine mandates came in, I was still technically in. However, I was on terminal leave, so they couldn't touch me at that point. But when I was on terminal leave, or when I just started terminal leave, it had not been a thing yet. The vaccine was still a mandate, an option. You didn't have to take the shot. But they had some incentives to make you get the shot. One of those instances had to do with leave. So, I'll give you a quick story. Before I went on terminal leave, this was about 2 months before I was able to do so. I had a wedding to go to at this time. It was around May, I want to say, back in Tampa. And in Tampa, it was considered a hot spot. Now, what does that mean? Well, if you go on leave to a hot spot in particular, that means you have to quarantine for 2 weeks. But before you go there for 2 weeks, you have to quarantine before you went on leave for 2 weeks. Then you got there. Then you had to quarantine when you got back for another 2 weeks. And essentially, you would have potentially gotten a month off. Maybe a month and a half, depending on how many leave days you have. But if you were vaccinated, you didn't have to quarantine yourself. And for my situation, if I got the vaccine, I think I would have had to wait 10 days at least before I could have traveled. Which by that point, it was already too late. So I wasn't able to go. That was one of those incentives, if you will, right? Kind of like with the NFL. Trying to make their life harder than it needs to be, if you per se. But if you get vaccinated, your life won't be as hard. Why take the hard road? That's the system the military had in place at that time. And then, by the time I started terminal leave, they decided, let's go ahead and make it mandatory for everyone. Screw it, we're done waiting. And at this point, I think in our country, we were having the conversation about why so many people were unvaccinated. I think only 50% of the population was vaccinated. Now we're at 70, I want to say. It's jumped 20 points, 20 percentage points. So I missed out on that. And I've had friends tell me they decided to not get the vaccine and they're just going to get discharged. Again, not going into details of what kind of discharge it is for their privacy. But I want to say that I think it's interesting in this scenario what's going on in Oklahoma. I mean, militia is legal per constitution. It's a kind of weird that, I don't know, because I understand why they feel as though it wouldn't make sense for the vaccine mandate to be enforced in this scenario. If you barely wear the uniform maybe once a month, 1 week out of the year, why should you have to? Especially if you have a job that's not requiring you, and you're not comfortable with the vaccine, why should you be forced to? Why? Well, it's better. It's for everyone's protection. Well, last time I checked, I mean, I've had this conversation before with other people, especially on this podcast. It's been proven that vaccinated people can also get other people sick, including vaccinated folks. Vaccinated can get other vaccinated folks. They can get the unvaccinated sick. There really hasn't been any stories proving that the unvaccinated gets other people sick. That's a fact. Right, if I'm not sick and unvaccinated, which I am, I'm vaccinated, but if I were to, if I was unvaccinated hypothetically and I came across an unvaccinated person, we'd never gotten COVID before, how does it make sense that we can get each other sick when we don't have the virus, but the vaccinated folks do have the virus? Think about that. So I get that argument. I understand, again, if you put on the uniform 1 weekend of the whole month, why should you have to? But at the same time, they're still in the military. They still fall within the UCMJ. Therefore, they still have to get the mandate. Or excuse me, they still have to comply with the mandate. Technically. The problem with the vaccine mandate in general right now is that there's no room for nuances such as this. That if you put on uniform 1 weekend out of the month, why should you have to get vaccinated? Why should you be part of this mandate? I get it. I think this is more of a policy issue than the National Guard itself. If there's no room for nuances such as this, you're going to come across these issues. Not to mention does not take into account of natural immunity. It doesn't matter if you've gotten sick from COVID, you still have to get vaccinated. And this is really the problem with any vaccine mandate that I have. That the mandate is so broad and so black and white, leaving no room for nuances, and frankly a violation of human rights, like my friend mentioned last week. But despite all of that, if you're going to make it some sort of incentive, if you will, leave for some nuances at least. Create nuances. Let's have a conversation on how we can meet each other halfway. Because it's not fair for those who are not comfortable with the vaccine, especially if they have genuine reasons to not want to take the vaccine. The majority of people who do not get the vaccine are not these conspiracy theorists wearing a tinfoil hat. They just decided from their own education that it's not in their best interest for their own health. Why is the government telling them to not trust their brains and eyes and ears if they listen to certain sources or their own doctors? As a matter of fact, the government is basically saying, don't even listen to your doctor, listen to us, the government. We got our own doctors here. They work for the government, technically, so you should take our word for it over your own education, your own sources. It's the problem that this policy has created. And I'm wondering if the Pentagon will actually go through with not recognizing them as in the National Guardsmen anymore. I'm not really sure about the legalities of all that. I'd be very curious to see how that would actually play out if it became a reality. I kind of wish to see it, to be honest. I just want to see what would happen. Especially with all this talk of secession, civil war perhaps, and no, I'm not trying to insinuate we should start a civil war right now. I've already come out and said I support secession, but with that said, does this lead up to a step towards that direction of secession? Does this open the paveway for other states to maybe follow suit? Oklahoma, of all places, could you imagine? Because at that point, if they had a militia, they would not have to respond to demands from the Pentagon to really go to the Capitol, for example, and provide security. They wouldn't have to respond to it. They would literally be at the hands of their state government. What would that look like? What do you think? Let me know through the social media platforms I mentioned earlier. But I'd be very curious to see what that would be like. With that said, we'll be back after this short break. Stay tuned for our last story. Welcome back to Taboo Topic. I'm your host, Ken Drew, per usual, with your third and final story of this evening. I want to look into this story because I think this story needs to really take off. On all sources, including liberal sources. I hope there's a liberal source that's listening to this by a 1/1,000,000th of a chance. And my hope is that you actually look into this story. Because this story is wild if it's true. And I think there is merit because, frankly, the FBI has not proven to be nonpartisan so far in the last 5-6 years. Actually, since the beginning of their creation, they've been proven to be partisan of anything. They've been used to weaponize against people they disagree with. With that said, let's get into it. This is from townhall.com. And this story is about a whistleblower coming out, revealing documents of FBI putting threat tags on parents protesting school boards. Now, a little context here. Protested school boards, there's obviously been a lot of national attention, in regards to parents being concerned about the curriculum that's being shoved down kids in public school systems. Whether it's critical race theory or promoting or pushing the LGBTQ agenda. There's been a lot of concern about that. And there have been instances where the FBI has publicly come out and stated, or at least the Biden administration, said they're going to look into parents and school boards. And there have been instances where I think school unions have even said to or pressured the DOJ to investigate parents who are protesting and speaking out against the curriculum that's being presented to school children. So I'm going to go ahead and read you the story here. Kind of give you a synopsis of what's going on here. But a government insider released documents that the FBI is doing to comply with a October 4th directive, the Biden administration requiring federal agents to come up with a plan to monitor harassment or threats against school board members, administrators, teachers, and support staff. A letter from the House Judiciary Committee ranking member Republican Jim Jordan, calling out Biden's Attorney General Merrick Garland, outlines the documents turned over by the whistleblower and demands answers from the DOJ about a air quote threat tag being used to track parents. The email referenced your October 4th directive to the FBI to address school board threats and notify FBI personnel about a new threat tag created by the Counterterrorism and Criminal Divisions, writes Jordan. The email directed FBI personnel to apply this new threat to tag all investigations and assessments of threats specifically directed against school board administrators, board members, teachers, and staff. As Jordan's letters continue, the email articulated the purpose of as scoping this threat on a national level, an opportunity for comprehensive analysis of the threat picture for effective engagement with law enforcement partners at all levels. Representative Jordan concludes that the whistleblower's disclosure provides specific evidence that federal law enforcement operationalized counterterrorism tools on the behalf of a left-wing special interest group against concerned parents, referencing the National School Boards Association coordination with the Biden administration to secure the DOJ's action against parents. The email also tweeted out by Republicans from the House Judiciary Committee is pretty clear on and in its purpose. Representative Jordan highlighted in his letter to Attorney General Garland a new threat tag OODA officials should be used to track investigations and assessments. One of those requests accompanying the guidance on the threat tag is that when evaluating potential threats, agents are to attempt to identify following A, is there a federal nexus? B, are there potential federal violations that can be investigated and charged? C, what's the motivation behind the criminal activity? So parents who show up at their local school board meeting, write a letter to administrators, or send an email to their child's teacher could now end up being tagged as a threat in the FBI's database if their words or actions are deemed to be threatening, harassing, or intimidating. Apparently, even if there aren't any federal violations that can be investigated or charged. For their part, the FBI claimed in the statement provided by the Wall Street Journal on Tuesday that applying a threat to tag an individual or incident doesn't necessarily mean an investigation will be open to the person or situation. The FBI described a threat tag as a tool to compile statistics and track information about a range of issues. The creation of a threat tag in no way charges long-standing requirements for opening an investigation, nor does it represent a shift in how the FBI prioritizes a threat. The FBI also claimed that it's never been in the business of investigating parents who speak out, but the Biden administration directive seems to be a contradiction, that as a parent who speaks out in a way that some bureaucrats say is threatening, harassing, or intimidating, could in fact find themselves receiving a tag. Representative Republican Jim Jordan also pointed out that the Attorney General Merrick Garland claimed in a testimony that the FBI wouldn't target parents as a result of his directive to look into conflicts happening between school officials and parents. If getting slapped with a threat tag by the FBI doesn't mean parents are being targeted, Garland definitely needs to explain how that works. Nicole Neely of grassroots nonprofit Parents Defending Education said the whistleblower's disclosures proved the FBI was in fact using counterterrorism tools to investigate concerned parents who have attended school board meetings, which directly contradicts Attorney General Garland's sworn congressional testimony. The American people deserve a full accounting of exactly who was involved, when, so that egregious overreach like this may be prevented in the future. Neely added, excuse me, my pronunciation is terrible. With all that said, let me give you my initial thoughts on this. My initial thoughts, none of this surprises me. And if it turns out that this is 100% true, which I have a hunch feeling it is, so it hasn't been officially confirmed because the FBI hasn't gone into detail of how this threat tag works, if you will, right? Has not gone into the details about that, so we'll give the FBI some benefit of the doubt on this scenario. But if it turns out that the FBI is actually targeting parents and using this broad understanding of threats, if you will, to the point where just simply calling out school board members or trying to hold them accountable is enough to consider it a threat, then we're in trouble. We're in worse trouble than I thought. Now, granted, like I said before, as the segment began, this is not the first time the FBI has been used as a political tool, especially to censor speech. It's been happening since the 1920s, when Hoover was the founder of the FBI, the first FBI director came about. J. Edgar Hoover, and excuse me, not J. Edgar Hoover. That. Let me actually look it up real quick. Let me double check here for you. FBI First Director. Gosh, I knew his name. I know his name. I thought I knew his name. It is J. Edgar Hoover. Okay, J. Edgar Hoover, the first FBI agent. It's been used as a political tool to censor speech and attack anyone who does not agree with the current administration, if you will. Ironically, though, from the last administration in particular, the FBI did everything they could to take down the last president, 45. So I think it's corruption to a new level, and it just so happens that the administration is back on the side with the FBI, or vice versa. The FBI is back on the side of the administration. So, of course, to me, it makes sense why the FBI would come after parents who are concerned about their kids' curriculum. God forbid. It's an attack on free speech, an attack on parents and children, frankly. They basically want kids to be indoctrinated. Yeah, I'm calling them out. Maybe the FBI hears me and puts me under a threat tag, even though I'm not a parent. I'm not at a school board meeting talking about this or talking to any school board official or member. If anything, I'm just a substitute teacher. That's all I am. They only does it 4 days out of the whole month. I'm technically a contractor. Don't really work for the district, as I can work in any district in the country. But with that broad stroke that they used, I could be deemed as a threat tag. I could be under their threat tag as well. I'm not even a parent. That would be the greatest irony of it all. But I should say, parents should not be intimidated by this. If you're a parent that is listening to what I'm saying right now, do not be intimidated. As I was watching Fearless with Jason Whitlock last night, I was watching an episode where he interviewed a person who was born under Soviet Russia, and he grew up pretty much and was educated under the communist system. And he was there when he got his master's. The Soviet Union just collapsed. And where I'm going with this is that during this interview, Jason Whitlock talks about how once upon a time in our country, we used to be concerned about being on the right side of God, being on God's side. And now it's become being on the right side of history, which if you dig deeper, being on the right side of history means whoever is in charge, that's the right side of history. So you want to be on the right side of history based on who's in charge. The parents, you have nothing to fear, because the stuff you're concerned about, angry about, that is evil. That's against God's law. Be more concerned with aligning yourself with God than, say, an institution like the FBI. You're on the right of this. And I say let them. Let them. If you want to go ahead and go after parents and everything like that, you know what it'll do, especially if it gets more, this gets more attention at some point, which I'm sure it will, especially on the right, with the right-wing media. This will just embolden parents to keep speaking up. This will embolden more people and wake more people up. So, to the Biden administration with this DOJ, I dare you. Go for it. If you think it's in your best interest, by all means, go for it. All you're going to do is wake more people up. I think it's silly, though, as well, to think and to trust the FBI at this point. Now, I don't want, when I say talk about the FBI, I'm not talking about the regular Joe or Jane. I'm talking about, there's, it's like the military right now. There's like this elite class in the Pentagon. That's the FBI as well, okay? The FBI has that elite core that is just out of touch with reality at this point. So out of touch that they can't recognize that what they're doing is a violation of the First Amendment. In Cry Me a River, if you feel, air quote, threatened, for the school board members that feel threatened, I'm sure there's parents that are genuinely maybe out of line, if you will. I've heard some stories for people I know that have expressed some parents at times have gotten really intense and actually may have stepped out of line, but I doubt that's the majority of the cases. And so when I hear school boards pressuring the DOJ to look into all of this, cry me a river if you think you're being threatened. Because you're threatening the truth by trying to indoctrinate those kids with a bunch of lies about our society, about our country, about morality, etc. Screw you. If that's going to be your attitude, screw you too. Again, parents, do not be intimidated. I'm on your side because I want to be on the right side of God. I want to be on God's side on this one, without a doubt. And you have my respect. With that said, stay tuned. We'll be back to close things out. Thank you. Welcome back to Taboo Topic. I'm your host, Ken Drew. Thank you, everyone, for tuning into today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I certainly did. Hope you enjoyed my new microphone. New microphone? New sound, maybe? Let me know through the social media platforms I mentioned earlier. With that said, ladies and gentlemen, thank you again for tuning in. And until next time, God bless. Have a blessed Friday. Adios.